Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell, filling in for Karem Mermetlu today. On the show with us, returning guest and a favorite of the show, and myself, Mike Beck. Mike is a serially successful resource investor. He's been around in the industry for more than one cycle. And Mike, thank you so much, as always, for taking time out of your schedule to join us and share your thoughts.
Colin, always a pleasure to speak with you and your colleagues.
Well, Mike, as I alluded to, you've been around for more than one cycle. You've seen how this plays out. And I want to start with a very general question, which is, you know, we're seeing gold certainly having something of a breakout. We're seeing nickel having something of a breakout. Also, a couple other commodities, several commodities not moving yet. But in the gold space, you're seeing the major mining companies are having a move, and yet the junior space seems about as dead as it was before gold went up $200. Is this something normal, and are you sensing any change, or are you seeing this phenomenon play out as well?
Look, it's sort of sad for me to say this, because I've been in the industry as an investor for more than three decades, but I think there's been a structural change in how capital is deployed in this industry, and a lot of it has to do with the advent of passive funds and ETFs. So a lot of the smaller cap funds that used to traffic at the junior end of the market, the speculative end of the market, don't exist anymore. And passives, I just saw actually recently a Bernstein research report that passive forms of investment that includes index funds, ETFs, and index tracking forms constitute something north of 50% of the equity sector today. And as you and I both know, passive forms of capital don't subscribe to private placements, which is really the lifeblood of the junior sector. They follow a particular index, and if you're in the index, they'll buy you, and if you're not, they won't. But they're not a source of capital. So we are seeing, as you mentioned, the uptick, for example, in gold, and you're seeing it manifested most directly in, for example, the gold ETFs and some of the larger cap, but there's been almost zero trickle down to the junior sector. And in my experience, this is different. In the past, when you had an uptick on gold, everybody in the sort of gold ecosystem, from the junior explorers all the way up to the large cap gold stocks and miners, would benefit. But here it's really restricted to the largest of the companies, and there's still a scarcity of capital for junior explorers. And I don't know how this will play out because it's really unprecedented. But the starvation of capital to the junior mining sector, unfortunately, continues. And it does create some opportunities, but when there's nobody writing checks except for maybe some intrepid retail investors to the junior sector, ultimately, a lot of these companies will go out of business, because without access to capital, they can't do what they do, which is explore for precious and other forms of metal. So it's sort of sad to see how the industry and the capital structure has changed. And this change is really over the last five to 6 years. So I don't know if that's your experience as well, but it's certainly what I'm seeing.
Well, look, you're not the first smart person I've spoken to in the industry who has pointed to these passive funds and the structural shift that is causing. I guess my question is back in my follow-up question, that is back in 1998 to 2002, you had a lull in the exploration space as well. And maybe there was more of an uptick once the gold price started to move. But there is typically some lag in the juniors. And at some point, a new group or money did rush into the sector. Maybe this will cause an even further lag. Is that your feeling? But eventually, exploration is needed. And a further lag would almost create even a bigger opportunity, wouldn't you think?
One would think so. And I remember the time it was post-BRIEX until around 2002 when money started to come back into the sector. But I it was fundamentally different in that really passives were not a factor. They were probably at that time index funds. I'm not even sure ETFs were around back then. But if they had a presence in sort of the asset management business, it was certainly less than 10%. And you had a proliferation of sort of speculative smaller cap hedge funds and the like, which were very active players, and when sort of the interest came back into the sector, they were there. In most cases now, those funds don't exist. So you've got these, instead, they've been replaced by these very large index and ETFs who cannot, as you and I know, write checks in and fill out subscription agreements for private placements to fund a junior explorer. And those that can, the active managers that remain, have tended to get larger and have rather strict liquidity requirements. And so most juniors, even if they have a window to invest in the junior mining sector, most juniors can't satisfy their liquidity requirements. So that source of capital is also much more limited than it was. So I don't know where this ends up, frankly, because the percentage of passive investment in the sector seems to be marching onward and upward. And you are right that at some point the returns will become in sort of the starved junior sector too attractive to be ignored, and there'll be some source of capital that will emerge. And the form and the quantum of that new source of capital is really, I think, it's anybody's guess.
Perfect. Well, Mike, if I were to characterize your investment style, I would say it's a highly researched, thought-out approach, and you try to pick a theme and identify it ahead of the crowd or ahead of an actual move, and then you try to get massive exposure to a very refined and specific space. So you did that successfully, very successfully with uranium, more recently with lithium and cobalt. And you've been very vocal the last couple of years when you spoke at our conference on Jekyll Island a few months ago that your next call is on nickel. And before we dive totally into nickel, just talk to us about your investment style and, you know, how that's led you to the nickel space now.
Yeah, so it's pretty much been a consistent sort of approach to investing. And first, I tried to get the macro right and the supply-demand outlook for a particular metal, because if that's not with you, then it's just too hard. And for example, uranium at the moment, even though I love the metal and it's been very good to us in the past, I just can't see a macro case for a structural uptick in uranium price. So even though there are many attractively priced uranium plays out there, without the macro in your favor, I think it's just too hard to, as they used to say in the old days, fight the tape. So you're right. So the first thing we do is we need to get conviction that the supply demand outlook for a particular metal or group of metals is positive over the next sort of 2 to 5 years. Looking out beyond that is difficult. And then once we have conviction, and by the way, we don't always get it right, but once we have conviction in our mind, then we seek out specific investments that really represent a leveraged exposure to that metal. So about 3 or 3.5 years ago, we started looking at battery metals, specifically, as you mentioned, lithium and cobalt and nickel in particular. And so we, in the case of lithium, we bought up lithium concessions in Argentina, which is a major source of lithium metal from brines. And actually, we sold that company earlier this year. And we did a similar exercise with some other colleagues, and that resulted in a company called Cobalt 27, which may or may not be sold in the next couple of weeks. There's a tender offer pending. And then the third metal, which at the moment we think is the most attractive and offers investors the most upside, is nickel. And so nickel has had a pretty dramatic run of late. The most sort of recent development let me step back first. And so why nickel? So nickel, most of the demand for nickel, 70%+, is stainless steel, but there's a new incremental source, fast growing, though still small at the moment, which is batteries. Batteries need nickel, and they need a lot of nickel. So as the world transitions to electrification of all things, including, most importantly, electric vehicles, it's going to create a new unprecedented incremental demand source for nickel. And so that's and nickel's a very capital intensive metal to bring on stream, so there are significant barriers for new production to come on. And so it has all, in our mind, it has all the makings of a perfect storm, and hence a good place for us as investors to be. And this is sort of the conclusion we came to probably 3 years ago with respect to nickel, as well as the other two battery metals, lithium and cobalt. So in the case of nickel, what's happened most recently of note, and some of your listeners who follow the nickel market will be aware of this, was there was a surprise announcement in August by Indonesia that they are accelerating their export ban on nickel ores. And the original ban had been announced and was scheduled to come in January of 2022. And then in August, Indonesia announced that, in fact, they had decided to accelerate the ban and bring it forward 2 years. So the ban is now expected to be put in place come December, like in 90 days. So that's a particular significance for nickel, because the nickel ores, which are NPI, nickel pig iron, represent a substantial source of the world's nickel supply, about 350,000 tons, and that's 350,000 tons in a market of 2.4 million tons. So that's 15% of world nickel supply in 90 days coming out of the market. And so there's been a mad scramble as people sort of adjust to this new reality, and it's manifested itself most in a most pronounced way in the nickel price. So the nickel price, which this year has been trading sort of between $5 and $6 a pound, has now spiked to a new level of $8 a pound. So it's up 60% post the announcement. And in fact, if you look at where nickel was about this same time last year, it was at about $9,800 a ton, and today it's closer to $18,000 a ton. So it's up. It's up sort of 60% year to date, and it's up plus 80% over the last 12 months, which makes it the best performing metals metal in the last year or so. So another surprise on the nickel market, aside from the Indonesian announcement, which caught everybody off guard. And by the way, you also see this not just in the price spike, but also if you look at LME-approved warehouses, you'll see that they've hit a new seven-year low. And at the moment, there are 140,000 tons of nickel metal sitting in LME warehouses, and that represents just about 3 weeks of supply, and that's down from 500,000 tons. So the nickel market is starting to tighten. There's not a lot of new supply, particularly for class one nickel, which is what you need for high-grade stainless steel, for series 300 stainless steel, and also for batteries, and the scramble is on. The other surprise kind of on the nickel market this year was stainless steel, which again represents by far the majority of the demand for nickel, was expected to grow sort of in line with world GDP of 3-3.5%. And in fact, in the first half of this year, Chinese stainless steel nickel production, which is by far the largest producer in the world, was up 8.5%. So that was way, way above even the most optimistic of consensus forecasts. So I think the question really is the price rise that we've seen in the last 90 days indicative of a new normal? And look, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't say with any degree of certainty, but it would seem so, because when you look at your, and we have a very detailed supply demand model, it looks like the nickel market is going to be increasingly in deficit, particularly as the proliferation of electric vehicles accelerates. And so we think nickel is going to continue to be a good place for investors to be. I don't know if you want me to comment on some of our specific
Let's
exposure to nickel.
Let's do that, but let me ask it in a slightly different lens. And I think this will be a fairly instructive discussion on how you get exposure to something. So once you've made a thesis and provided conviction behind it, the next step is to figure out how to make the money. And, you know, looking back at your past experience, Cobalt 27, for example, you guys decided to play the physical market in a big way. And the reason for that is it's very tough to get in the ground direct exposure to cobalt. Cobalt's a byproduct. It's very rarely a primary metal. It's not in good jurisdictions and rarely in a pure play in a pubco. But then if you look back to, say, your uranium days, you were able to find a very sizable deposit. You were able to have it in a primary public setting, and you were able to capitalize off that. So in the case of nickel, you know, how did you decide to go about getting exposure?
Yeah, so you're right. Our preferred form of exposure would be to acquire privately a large asset containing that metal, which with minimal exploration risk. And we're less concerned about grade, because if our thesis is correct, what might today be sub-economic grade with the rise in the underlying commodity price becomes all of a sudden an economic grade. And that's how you can get massive leverage on the particular metal. So in the case, and you're absolutely right, in the case of Cobalt 27, for all the reasons you cited, it was just not possible to acquire. There is no such thing really as a cobalt mine. So we had to sort of create, and it wasn't just me, it was Anthony Maluski and the poly guys a sort of cobalt pure play exposure by buying metal and doing streaming deals. But in the case of nickel, we first started looking for our preferred form of exposure, which is to acquire privately a large scale nickel project. And we spent probably the better part of a year scouring the market everywhere from Africa to Australia to Canada, looking for such an asset, and we could not find one. We couldn't find one because, number one, there just aren't that many nickel projects around. And number two, the few that were that had minimal exploration risk either didn't have the size to give us sort of the leverage that we wanted, or were just priced, in our opinion, too highly. So the next thing we did was go to the public markets and look at nickel companies that maybe were orphans and that had been sort of left in the dust because nickel's been beaten up now for 7 or 8 years and arguably for even longer, 12 years since the last big nickel spike was in 2007 when nickel hit $15,000 a ton. And we, in that sort of search, we discovered a company. It was called Hard Creek Nickel. At the time, it's been renamed Giga Metals, and it very much suits what we seek. It's a massive nickel sulfide deposit, and nickel sulfide was our preferred form of nickel exposure. That's the material that gives you class one nickel, which is what's needed for the high grade stainless steel and the batteries. And so the deposit is called Turnagain. It's in British Columbia. It's almost, in fact, they put out an updated resource report on it about 10 days ago. It's now 2 billion tons. Lower grade, 0.23% with a cobalt byproduct credit. But it's the kind of thing that if the nickel price goes from where it is today at just shy of $18,000 a ton to, let's say, $25,000 a ton, which is, by the way, half of where the last nickel high was in 2007 at $50,000 a ton. All of a sudden, this deposit goes from being of marginal interest to being of great economic interest. And so we acquired as much of the stock as we could. The stock is still very much an orphan. It's not really covered by any research houses. It has a market cap, I think, of even with its recent run-up of only $19 million Canadian. And for us, it's a perfect sort of way to add nickel exposure to our portfolio. And we're patient, and it will get re-rated as the nickel price increases. And so long as we've got our thesis correct, and that is that the shortages become more acute as we move out over the next 2 to 3 years, nickel price will go up further, and all of a sudden Giga Metals will get re-rated. So that's kind of our investment strategy. For those that just don't have the time or the inclination to do the legwork, there are other ways to play the nickel thesis. One, if you want a liquid sort of large cap stock, probably the best almost pure nickel play would be Norilsk, the Russian large producer. They're the number two producer of class one nickel in the world. They're listed on London, and it's liquid, and its price will go up, share price, as the nickel price goes up. Further down the chain, there's a good company in Australia called Independence Group. It's listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, IGO. They're not a pure, but largely pure play nickel producer. And then there's another Australian company, which is interesting, which full disclosure, we own. It's called Nickel Mines. It has also listed on Australia. They just started production in Indonesia. They're partnered with Tsingshan, which is the largest stainless steel producer in the world. And they have a market cap of around $1 billion, give or take, Australian. So it, depending on what your appetite is, and, you know, you can buy all the way from Norilsk down to Giga Metals to get exposure to this metal. There aren't a lot of other exposure opportunities because, again, the nickel market's relatively small, at least compared to copper, and so you don't have... You don't have a, you know, 50 or 60 different copper producers of various size. You might, in the case of the nickel world, you might have 10 to 15, and not all of those are majority nickel producers. Like the largest nickel producer is Vale in the world, but only 12% of their revenues come from nickel. It's really an iron ore company more than anything. So I'm not sure if that answered your question, but that's. And apologize for rattling on.
Well, Mike, it's always a treat having you on the show, and you've got an absolutely brilliant mind and the track record to reflect that. I find it so unique that everyone in the industry who is successful has a different style about how they go ahead and make that money. And you know, no doubt this strategy's worked for you before. The last time you did something so similar to this, the company went from $4 million to a buyout in the billions. So I wish you the best of luck on having a similar outcome here. And as a required disclosure, I own shares in Giga Metals, in fact, at your suggestion a couple years ago, and it's been a fantastic trade so far. Giga trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GIGA. Mike, I'll definitely do this again sometime in the next few months.
No, always happy to, and maybe the next time I'll talk about, because it doesn't always work, as you know, I'll talk about our failures, but we probably don't have enough time to talk about how it can go wrong. And it does go wrong, particularly, and it usually goes wrong because we got our macro model and outlook wrong. And lithium was kind of an example. We thought the lithium, we got the uptick correct, and we thought it would stay there for a number of years. And in fact, it came off rather dramatically. And we ended up, and our shareholders, doing all right, but not what. So it doesn't always go right. We're fallible, like everybody else, and more often than not, we don't get it exactly as we anticipate. But that's kind of the fun of the business, as you know.
Yeah, that would be a very instructive conversation to have as well. So I think that's a great idea. Well, Mike, thank you for taking the time out, and do this in a few months.
Look forward to it. And as always, thanks, Colin, and talk soon.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?